I'm Hector Garcia, and in 2012, I started an advertising agency in my daughter's pink bedroom and with $750. Today, that agency is worth over $10 million. It took a lot of pain, plenty of failure, and a lot of hustle. Running a business isn't easy, but today I want to share with you what you usually don't see beyond the hustle. Welcome to the first episode of Beyond the Hustle podcast. I am Hector Garcia, and I am joined here today with Caleb Monroe of the Monroe Group. Caleb, welcome to the show. Thanks for being my first guest here on Beyond the Hustle. Caleb, you are with, obviously you started this company, the Monroe Group, back in 2021?
Yeah, 2021 is whenever I started bringing on like admin staff and things along those lines. Very first agent, like at the very end of the year, but we didn't really start bringing on other agents until about 2022.
Yep.
But thank you for having me. I'm honored. It's an awesome studio that you guys have set up here, and I'm honored to be the first guest on this one.
No, I'm glad. You know, I met Caleb about a few months ago, probably back in May, I think.
Yeah.
Right back in June.
Right.
At a good buddy of ours, his wild party that he has every year. But you know, I was I'm very intrigued, and part of the reason why we have this podcast and the vision behind the podcast is be able to share stories of entrepreneurship and sharing our heart, sharing our hustle, sharing the grind behind it, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. And coming across you and getting to know you even more in the last couple of months, I was very impressed and inspired to hear a youngster. You know, Caleb, I know you on your website, you said, you know, age is not, I mean, it's not that, you know, not important, but,
right.
Or it's just a number, but, you're 24 years old.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. 24. And how old were you when you started the Monroe Group?
Whenever I was starting the team itself, it wasn't until I turned about 21, but I got into the business of real estate at 19. So I got in pretty much right after I graduated high school. I did a semester in college, was majoring in marketing, was getting like pretty much all my basic classes done, and quickly realized that as I was licensed while I was in school, that the business was kind of picking up somewhat fast, and ultimately realized that if I wanted to pursue one thing, one of those things is going crazy right now, which was real estate at the time. If you remember anything about 2020 and 2021, which I'm sure we'll get into, you know, the market was going crazy, and I felt as if that was the perfect time to kind of jump into it. And then when I turned 21, I had already had an assistant, marketing director, videographer. I'd started flipping houses. So the inevitable creation of the Monroe team was needed because I just had so many other things going on that ultimately I knew that if I wanted to really grow exponentially, I couldn't do it alone.
You're making moves here in the market. I hear a lot about your group and not only just locally, but nationally. So you're traveling around the country too, as well, making speeches and being at conferences, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Back in 2021 as well, I went to a conference. It's a Tom Ferry Summit, and Tom Ferry is like the number one real estate coach that there is in the United States, at the very least, I believe in the world, really, because he's you know, past just the nation as well. And I had the opportunity this past summit, which was in August, to speak in front of 5,000 people in attendance and over 10,000 people online. And I loved it, man. I mean, I'm getting to do that. Plus a lot of the other intimate ones that I'm getting to. I just got back from South Carolina a few weeks ago. That was a room of like maybe 150 people.
Right.
So stark difference, but it leaves the same sort of impact. And I'd argue that even some of those rooms are more impactful because of the conversations I get to have before and after the speech is even completed, you know. The big stages are the big goals of mine, of course, but I love getting into the intimate settings because you get to really impact people a little bit more on a one-on-one basis.
Right. Tell us about your story. Who is Caleb beyond the business? Obviously, I always tell people I am the business, right? There's no separating, you know, when I leave here at 6 o'clock, I'm still working. My mind is still thinking about work, but let the audience know, who is Caleb personally?
So Caleb is just a 20-something-year-old kid trying to make it. You know what I mean? I think that question of who is Caleb Monroe has been a big question on my mind over the last, I'd say, year and a half, 2 years. And the reason I say that, I think you and I talked about this before. This past year was the first year I actually kind of felt comfortable. And I realized a lot of things in that comfort. And, you know, I think that comfortable might sound a little bit misleading to the audience out there because it sounds great. Well,
right.
Caleb's comfortable when he's 23 years old. That's awesome. The reality is, what I mean by that is that this was the first year I really didn't shake anything up for myself. You know, I got into real estate. It's a brand new industry for someone that had never owned a home before. So that in itself, I was going to learn a lot of stuff very, very quickly.
Right.
And it made me very uncomfortable, put my back against the wall to the point where I had to perform or else, pretty much. And then somewhat after that, I started flipping houses. And then after that, I built the team. So like for the first 3 years of my career, there was nothing but just rapid growth because that's what I knew. And that's, to answer your question, that's who Caleb Monroe was. But in this past year of having systems and processes in place, the right people working on the team, you know, making sure that we're helping as many people as humanly possible, I've had a lot more time to myself to be able to figure out that question of who is Caleb Monroe? Why am I wanting to do all this stuff, make this money, do these investments, do these deals? And I've broken it back down to like a couple of different things. And some of them are the cliches, you know, we want to give back and help others. But I think, you know, past the cliches, I look at like my parents, right? My mom and dad. Me and my family were like the house that everybody went to. And a lot of people could probably relate to that. You know, you know, you had problems at home. You had an argument with your mom and dad for whatever reason.
Right.
They must have just liked my mom's cooking and they would come over for some comfort food. Yeah. You know what I mean? So looking at that, I kind of looked back at a more logical standpoint of how that is now. And it made me realize, well, my mom and dad had me and my two older sisters plus all of our friends, like all of our friends.
Right.
And that made me realize, well, my mom and dad really never got a fair shake at what income they might have been making. Granted, you know, they make decent livings, but they're not business people. So it's not like they have crazy amounts of incomes that they can just, you know, go exponential with. So it occurred to me it might be beneficial for me to start giving back sooner rather than later, considering all the stuff that they missed out on, based off me and my sisters really just kind of having our friends be over, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So I think that like my mission, and this is a long-winded way of answering your question, is to kind of create freedom for other people.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, that goes for my parents, like I was just talking about. It goes for the agents on my team, creating freedom in the business, because as a real estate agent, there's so many hats that you wear. And I think that when you really boil down the job, there's only a couple of different things that you do that actually produce you income. And if I can create some freedom from other agents in the industry by allowing them to just focus on those things, then they'll make more money, have a better life, and provide better for their family too, thus creating freedom for them, and so on and so forth. But that's, I guess, like the bone dry gist of it is freedom.
I'm glad you brought up your parents, because that's what was going to be one of my next questions. So tell me about what you know, how you were raised, because we're a product of how we were raised, right? And life experiences of what we've gone through. Entrepreneurship for me, I think, started, I told you earlier that entrepreneurship for me started when I was nine.
Yep.
My father was a carpenter, painter. My dad was also a migrant worker. You know, one of the greatest things my father ever did for me was at 9 years old, give me a lawnmower. He told me, here's a lawnmower, and you're going to go cut yards.
Yeah.
And I went cutting yards door to door and knocking on doors for and asking for a job and cutting yards for $5, $10 each. Yep. So I would say when people say, hey, you know, entrepreneurship, when did that start? And I was young.
Yep.
And at 9 years old, I was already cutting yards and starting a business. I had flyers at the convenience store, getting phone calls at the home. At 12 years old, I started a car wash business where I was going to local corporate businesses and local businesses and washing cars and doing that for like $80 a month.
Right.
And for 12, 13 years old in the early 90s, that was decent money.
Decent money.
That was decent money.
Yeah.
But, you know, for you, when was that? Is that you're just like, you know what? Did you have a feeling when you were young that, you know what, you just think that you're going to be working for somebody, or you say, I'm going to have something, I'm going to run a business?
I think somewhat I always kind of knew that I'd be my own boss, you know, that I would have a business. Did I always know what it was? Heck no, especially not real estate. I wasn't thinking about that as a young kid. I just knew I had a roof over my head. I didn't know how I got there, you know, but I think that everything that I did in life, I tried to do a little bit extra.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, like I've only had three jobs in my life. This is my third job.
Wow.
My second job was Cutco, which we'll probably talk about that a little bit more too. But my first job was a bagger at Kroger.
Okay.
And being a bagger at Kroger, there was a Kroger literally 10 minutes.
That's incredible. So two jobs ago,
I was a bagger at Kroger.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little insane for sure. I was a junior in high school.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate that. It was like my summer of my junior year going into senior year, I was working there. And I remember the application process, you know, there's a Kroger literally 10 minutes down the road from my house. I ended up applying for the Kroger that was about 20 minutes away. It was in Pearland in comparison to being like Sagemont area.
Right.
The only reason I did that was because I had friends that worked at both the Kroger locations. And my friends at the Pearland one said, hey, they give tips over here. And my brain is like, well, I'm going to try to take advantage of whatever I can when it comes to a job. Obviously, they might be paying me, I think it was like $8 an hour. Something along those lines, like, well, if they give tips over there and they don't do it over here, well, let me try to maximize what I can over there. And then I was a bagger at Kroger. And I think I trace it back to this, anytime that somebody would come through my line, and the tips were just kind of like the byproduct at the end of things. But being a bagger at a grocery store is kind of boring, if I'm being honest, unless it's like the Thanksgiving rush and like everybody's going through. You do not have a dull moment for sure. So in the spirit of it being boring, I kind of just tried to make anybody laugh that came through the line. I tried to ask them about their day.
You come through so many people there today, I'm sure you left an impression.
Absolutely. You have to, because ultimately I think that's what really got me through the days so quickly. You know, you get off school, 3 o'clock, and you get to the Kroger as soon as possible, and you're there until like 9 or 10 when it closes. You know, there's plenty of people that work excruciating hours outside of that. I don't want to make sure that's, not discredited. But for me, like, my main way of getting through that shift as quickly as possible was just, let's make some relationships with the people that are coming through. I don't know what these are going to do for me in the future or if they're going to do anything for me. But at the very least, it'll get me through my 8 hours.
Interesting. So you're definitely not an introvert.
No, I talk to everybody.
And that's an incredible story. And then from there, you went from being a sacker at Kroger, then you're going to, was it Costco?
Cutco. So Vector Marketing is like the overview company, but Cutco is like a very high quality kitchen brand, pretty much. So like the sharpest knives that you've ever seen, like pots and pans.
This is where you learn sales.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I remember—
Tough sell.
It is. If you can sell a $1,000 knife set to somebody, you can sell anything.
Right.
I will tell you that. And it's funny because I remember leaving Kroger and so many people— Cutco is a very big recruiting company. Like, their main business is recruiting. It's new heads in the office. And the main people that they recruit is college students, high school students, people that are kind of wanting to go maybe into sales after school but don't really know the right path. And for me, I was super skeptical, just like anybody. Right. But so many people at my Kroger were pleading with me not to go do it. They're like, man, they're a scam. Have you read the reviews? Have you done this? Have you done that? Like, I just wouldn't do it. And there was one manager at my Kroger. He's a client of mine now. His name's Alex. And I'll never forget it. He was like, at Kroger, they have the managers that have like the red vests. And they're like the floor managers pretty much. And what he was telling me was, and Alex is a young guy himself, he was like, look, people are going to tell you their own opinions and that's fine. You can listen to them. You can not listen to them. But I'm going to give you my opinion. My opinion is, whenever they promoted me to have this red vest on, I was nowhere near ready. I was just, a bagger that went quickly into a cashier, and then they quickly promoted me to this manager position. And it's a manager position, which is great. It's not my be-all, end-all. But at the same time, I wasn't ready. Yet I still said yes, because I knew that if I wasn't ready and I still was forced to be in the position, I was going to figure out a way to make something happen. And so I'm telling that to you because Kroger's going to be here.
Right.
And everybody here loves you. So worst case scenario, you go try it, you hate it, you suck at it, something, and you come back. But at least you went and tried.
Right.
And that like stuck with me forever. And he knows that stuck with me forever. I talk to him every now and then now. And I mean, I ended up making the leap, going into Cutco. My senior year of high school, I made like $40,000 selling knives. And it was whenever I did an appointment for one of my teachers who was a realtor at the time, Steven, and still is a realtor. Now he's a full-time realtor, not a teacher anymore. Congrats to him.
Yeah.
And after the appointment was done, he just asked me, he's like, what do you want to do after school? And I'm like, I was going to go for a marketing degree. I like sales. I like doing this. I don't know what I will sell, but I want it to be legal. So I'm going to go the school route and see what I can make happen, right? And he's like, well, what do you make when you sell one of these knives? And I told him it was maybe a couple $100 depending on the knife. He's like, well, this is what I make when I sell one house. And you sew a 4 or 5 figure check to a 17-year-old kid and you say this is what you did off of one transaction, you're going to pique his interest, right? And so immediately I'm like, okay, well, how do I do that? Is that even something that I could be good at? And he's like, man, you just sold me and my wife a couple $100 worth of knives. I think that you could be okay at it. I procrastinated for a very long time. I did not sign up right away, and he kept on me. Like, he pushed me. And I remember he called me one day to his room during like mega lunch that we had at school. And I went in and he's like, hey, sit down real quick. I want to show you something. So I sit down. And as I sit down, he's calling the real estate school office. And he's like, hey, can you email me like y'all's summer schedule, what y'all have coming up for the next couple months? I have somebody here, a friend of mine, that wants to get signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, like this is real now. Like, I have to do this now.
Right.
And so like I really appreciate him for pushing me because, I mean, man, I cried on my way to real estate school. I didn't know if it was for me or not. But he definitely pushed me in the right direction. That's for sure.
I know a lot of people who've done the real estate school or try to do that. They stop almost when it's almost complete.
Yeah.
Help me understand why that is.
It's funny. I think that, so there's 6 qualifying classes that you need to get into real estate. There's other packages that they'll sell, but the 6 classes is really all you need.
Okay.
And in those six classes, the first two are going to sound completely foreign to you. You're not going to know what they're talking about. It's going to be completely, you know, a new language. And if you don't own a home, it's even worse, right?
Right.
The next two classes are going to be somewhat familiar. You're going to find that there's a lot of the stuff that they've said before popping up again, a lot of new laws, a lot of finance, things like that. By the last two classes, you're like, why are they saying the same stuff over and over again? I think like the real reason a lot of people, not even just prior to finishing the classes, but bounce out of the industry in the first couple of years is because they don't really understand the potential for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if more people saw like the back end for so many other people that have just stuck with it past 2 years, the failure rate and the rate of people that actually pass and go through all their classes would be exponentially higher.
And also, I mean, real estate, being a real estate agent, you've got to know sales.
Absolutely.
And sales doesn't come natural for everybody.
Something else I'll say, and I mean, I hope this doesn't get taken the wrong way by anybody out there, but the bar of entry to our industry is very low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hector, something you have to understand is that we're dealing with most people's largest asset they will ever purchase or sell.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about that, six classes that could take you 3 to 6 weeks to get a license and help people do that,
right,
kind of concerning, right?
Right?
But at the same time, there's plenty of good people out there that actually do it. And I think that as long as they, like I said, kind of stuck it out and went through the mud a little bit,
right,
I think that's another part of sales people don't ever understand or get. Sure, you have to have the gift of gab and talk and so on and so forth. But any sales job, as long as you see it through for long enough, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. And so from Cutco, that's when you started. I mean, from there, you learned the sales aspect.
Sure, yeah.
But you were already kind of doing that even at Kroger's because, I mean, sales is knowing people.
Right.
Right? And getting to know people and really getting to connect with them.
Exactly.
I've always said this as a business owner is that, you know, to get people to buy a product, don't get them to believe in the product. Get them to believe in you.
100%.
Right? People, not necessarily, they think with this, but they buy with this, especially with a big, you know, a purchase as far as when it comes to a house.
100%.
You're selling the emotion. You're selling the feel. You're selling, is it right for you? Obviously, when it comes to investing, if somebody's going to flip a house, that's different.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're somebody going to get somebody into a house that they're going to live with their family, especially if it's their first-time homeowner, the emotion is a very emotional process.
Yeah.
But the sales aspect, you learned that really at a young age.
Yeah.
At Kroger's. And then going to Cutco. And then obviously that now positions you for the greatness that you are now. Now you are overseeing, you're a record-breaking agent, right?
Appreciate that.
It says here, you're number one solo production agent at Keller Williams Clear Lake, right?
Not anymore.
So you're past that. Yeah. That's where you started, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So you went from Cutco to Keller Williams.
Yeah, Cutco to Keller Williams. And you're right about Cutco. It definitely, I think, was like the more structured organization version of sales. And that's when I learned, oh, what I've been doing this whole time is sales. So going into KW, I went there because I had some familiar faces that I could kind of like.
Well, let me backtrack a little bit because I want to talk about this journey. So you're at Cutco and you're like, okay, now you're talking to your friend.
Yeah.
And he's saying, hey, if you could sell knives, well, that's incredible.
Right.
You're selling knives. And how are you finding people to sell knives? You're just going door to door or just.
So Cutco. I think that if anybody is listening out there and their kid wants to be in some version of sales or is like kind of saying that, make them do Cutco.
Okay.
And I promise you it is the best intensive training that you will ever have when it comes to like true hard sales.
Yeah.
Again, you sell $1,000 knife set to somebody, you can sell most things. And ultimately, like Cutco's biggest thing was people. Mm-hmm. Not only on the company, their overhead was new business, new reps that they had coming in. That was like where they made most of their money, but they taught all of their reps how to get more people to buy Cutco. So like my goal on every single appointment was to get at minimum 30 people.
Mm.
I'm going to sit here in your living room. I'm going to show you the knives and you're going to buy whatever you buy that based off what you use. And then afterward, while I'm cleaning my knives ever so slowly, I'm going to jog your memory about your 30 closest friends and you're going to give me their name, email address, and potentially phone number to go out and call. And did I get hung up on a lot? Absolutely. Did some of those people that referred me get cussed out by their friends? 100%, right?
Yeah.
But the ones that didn't, you know, ultimately I started to, after I heard my friend say that, I was researching real estate more myself on the outside. And then each appointment that I would go into, I'd kind of like bring it up in passing, right?
Right.
And say, you know, I'm doing this because I want to get into real estate after. This is kind of giving me my platform to be able to get there. And everybody that I talked to, it was weird. You know, like, you know, the blue car syndrome, you get a blue car and all of a sudden all you see around you is blue cars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was weird because every appointment I started doing, I would meet like title officers, I would meet investors, I'd meet people that were doing real estate and had been doing it for years. Each one of them would tell me, dude, you need to get into this. Like, I think that you would be very good. And it was just encouraging. It was what I needed because ultimately, like I said, I wasn't familiar enough with real estate to be fully confident, gung-ho, this is what I want to do.
Right.
You know, so that was like the encouragement I think I needed to eventually go in.
So you went and then pursued, I guess, the schooling, right? So you did the school for 3 to 6. How long was it? How many weeks?
It took me roughly like a month and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. I procrastinated a lot, though.
Okay. And then that process, then you're saying, okay, then you went from there. You did the process. Was there any time during that process you're like, you know what? This is not for me.
I think that there was many times, I probably didn't ever think that it wasn't for me, but there was many times that I tried to get away from it without like explicitly saying, I'm putting this on the back burner. For example, my girlfriend at the time, who I was dating, her dad was a car sales, like GM, mm-hmm. at a car dealership. And I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe I can, because I was also coaching Cutco reps at the time, like giving me a coaching position because I was like, I'm done selling. I want to do this.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we want you here. Can you help us with this? I'm like, absolutely. So I was coaching reps and I was thinking, well, maybe I can go do car sales for a little bit and then do real estate on the side.
And here you're about, what, 19?
And I was like 19 at the time, yeah. And that ultimately was trashed ASAP because I saw car salesman's hours and I respect it. Like, that is a hustle. But I knew that ultimately I would not be able to efficiently grow something with working those hours and putting my all into it how I knew I would want to. So that's what ultimately led me to say, you know what? College will be here, because I was in school at the time. Mm-hmm. College will be here. I finished my semester out and then ultimately just went full-fledged into real estate. And inevitably got into it at the perfect time without necessarily realizing it. Obviously, we all know what happened right after 2020 started.
Right. And so, and then you finish school and you just go straight to Keller Williams. How do you find that?
For me, I knew it was going to be Keller Williams because at Champions, where I was going to real estate school, it's the school that I recommend for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They would have different brokerages come in, bring us lunch, and give us a pitch pretty much. And ultimately, KW was the one that consistently impressed me because of all the training. And so even to this day, any brand new real estate agent, I could recruit them to the team or to our brokerage. But the reality is, I know that they would be much better off with the basic foundational training that I got. And there's no better place for that, in my opinion, than KW. And that's coming from somebody that is not with KW anymore, you know? And I just think that.
And while you're at KW, that's where you were the number one seller production agent.
Correct, yeah.
So all that, and at a young age, I mean, you had some older folks like myself.
Yeah.
Right? And like, what's this? I'm not, again, you're like, what's this kid doing? What's different about you? What I mean, if you're saying like, what do you think makes yourself different from others?
I think in any sales world, but especially in real estate, things are so overcomplicated.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think I had the blessing of being naive.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like I quickly rose to be number one out of, I think it was like 450 agents at the time at that brokerage. And the reason was, it was during like a global pandemic where everybody was like, I don't know if I should leave the house. Are my clients going to be offended if I ask if they want to go view homes? And I was just the guy that put on two gloves and a mask and was like, let's go show some houses. You know what I mean? So I think that during that time, I got a little bit ahead because I was a little bit naive. I really didn't know what to expect getting into the industry, let alone during a global pandemic, right? And when you couple that with so many other people that kind of have their own preconceived notions about real estate, current markets, how things go, and you throw a guy like me in the mix who's just like balls to the wall no matter what I'm doing, and I have no idea what I'm doing, I'm just going to go.
But also, I guess from a consumer standpoint, you know, your customer, right? So from your customer, you know, if I'm a 35 year old and I have two kids and a wife and a pet dog and I'm looking for a house, you had to go some extra steps to convince them to trust someone as young as you.
I would say so. I think that, you know, it's funny because there's a one fear that every new realtor has when they get into the business, and that's they're going to go on an appointment and the buyer or the seller that they're trying to represent is going to ask them, how many homes have you sold? I didn't get that question until I was actually like proud to answer that question.
Right.
You know, and I think it's because everybody says fake it till you make it. I don't know if I like that term as much as I would say like, you know, act as if, right?
Right.
If you want to be a certain person in the next 5 years, and this is how I live my life. You want to be a certain person in the next 5 years. You want to have a certain level of income, certain net worth, certain amount of cars, certain family life, certain whatever. You kind of have to decipher who that person is. Like for me, I had to look at, okay, well, who is this top realtor in Houston and what does he do on a daily basis? Who does he hang out with? What does he eat? Where does he go? And as much as I wanted to be like a 19-year-old kid that's just like, you know, fluffing off and having fun with friends, I'm like, mm-hmm. I got to put these things in place to assure that in the next 5 years, I become that person that I'm looking for. You know what I mean?
And it's, you sacrifice too.
For sure.
I mean, you weren't at the parties. You weren't out. You weren't out, you know, when, like you said, most people your age were at 19, 20, they were out college parties and going out and enjoying life.
Yeah.
When in your free time, you were doing, spending time and investing in building yourself, investing into your career, and then going out and doing sales. And then from at Keller Williams, how long were you there?
I was at KW for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
Almost 3 years.
And then obviously you rose, worked your way to the top there.
Yep.
And then that process. Okay. Then you're like, okay, you're now 21, 20.
I was almost 22. I just turned 22.
22.
Yeah.
And at 22, you're going to say, you know what? Let me just go off on my own. What was that spark? What was it? What was that moment like? What were you thinking? And what was that? Like, okay, I'm done. I've accomplished here at Keller Williams. Because it's not like you were probably making some decent money.
Yeah.
At that point.
For sure.
So I'm going to risk it all and now go on my own.
KW is, like I said, it's the perfect starting point for, I think, any agent, if I'm being honest with you. Now we're at another brokerage. I don't have my own brokerage. I have one more year before I can actually test for the license, and we can get into why I probably won't do that.
Right.
But I ended up making the decision to move to the company that we're at now, Real Broker, based off a couple of things with that specific KW office. And KW is a great company. I'd never say anything bad about them. But whenever I moved, it was more for like the agents being able to make some more money.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, because explain to me, because I'm a bit confused, and hopefully I know the audience too as well, probably might understand how it works. So obviously you're working under a broker, right? And so like you get to have your own brand.
Correct.
Right. But some people, I've seen where they just say, okay, this is Caleb and I'm with the KW, Keller Williams, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then you were able to go to Real and be able to be your own brand under Real?
So at KW, we were too, but Real definitely gave us a lot more freedom with that. So like, I wouldn't say that they're just not letting us, we shouldn't brand with Real anywhere. We still have Real on all of our logos and so on and so forth, just kind of hidden in places and things like that. So it gave a lot more brand freedom. And I think that was another big reason why I ended up making the jump, because I had kind of established myself. We had kind of been working on systems, processes, the right people to put in place for the team. And ultimately, when I made the jump, I felt comfortable enough in our own systems, our own processes, and most importantly, our own brand to know I didn't need the KW calling card on every single appointment I went on, because it got to a point where no one was asking.
Share with me, failure is a part of business. One thing, I've been in business for 12 years. I fail a lot.
Yeah.
And I learn through a lot through my failures.
Yeah.
It's a part of the process. It's a part of the pain of what we go through as entrepreneurs. I could probably name on my hand maybe 4 or 5 instances that were incredibly life-changing for me. That were moments of failure in my life, but it changed the direction of where I went as a business owner.
Yeah.
Right now, you've been in business 4 years?
4 years.
4 years. In those 4 years, do you have any moments like that?
Man, anytime I get asked this question about like failures, I there's one key point that like I go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right at like the tail end of 2022, I'd say. I had been growing the team, growing the business. I had just gotten to flipping houses the prior year, like at the end of that prior year. And I'd flipped a bunch of homes accumulated a bunch of cash and got to a point where I was like, I want to plant my money into something that I can hold on to and see grow long term. Now, since then, let me be very clear on a disclaimer. I'm much more smart about how I buy properties.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I was not. And I was just kind of like, well, I'm just going to buy it if it makes money, right? At that time, Airbnb was very, very hot.
Mm-hmm.
That was still kind of in the tail end. It was like maybe early 22. It wasn't late 22, but it was still on like the tail end of the pandemic. So there wasn't as many crazy vacations being taken yet. Galveston was still a hot hub for like staycations and people going out there. So personally in the real estate industry, we saw tons of people that would buy a property maybe like January, February, like renovate it completely, put hundreds of thousands of dollars into it, rent it out May, June, July, August. Maybe even get to November for the biker rally in Galveston. And then by December, the home was on the market for sale. The previous year, we saw people making a crap ton of money doing that. And so me, along with a lot of other folks that I'm really good friends with in the industry, all caught the bug and were like, well, let's go be short-term rental hosts in Galveston.
Right.
During that time, mind you, I was also flipping a couple of homes. My mortgage payments on those homes that I was flipping, roughly $8,000 to $9,000 a month. I had just brought on my third salary member. So all in salaries, I was probably close to like $10,000, $12,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that I kind of help out with family at home if they ever need it. Of course, they have it. Not to mention that I have a car and the fact that I have to put gas in that car and the fact that I eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner just like everyone else. So there was a lot of money coming out during a time where I had just started learning how to make money, if that makes sense. So I had really just started to compound, really had started to make, you know, multiple six figures. And at the same time, I was also spending a lot of money on investments, on projects, on growth for the team, on so on and so forth. And I ended up, for whatever reason, deciding I should buy this property in the midst of all this. And I bought this property in Galveston, a beach town, in August. Mm-hmm. Now, if you know anything about any beach town, that's not the time of year that people are going to the beach anymore. That's like on the tail end of that time of year.
Right, still starting.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I bought this property turnkey, another thing I never do nowadays, bought this property turnkey and spent $450,000 on it. It was worth, at that time, $525,000. Now, if we piece together this timeline, I can give you a little bit of real estate history real quick. 2020 all the way through 2021, the market was insane. And we're talking the lowest interest rates that we had ever really seen. We're talking people bidding $60,000 with the asking price like it was nothing on every single house that you saw.
Yeah, this is a time when people were lining up for houses.
Absolutely. It was crazy. 20-plus people every single open house you had. It was a great time. It was fun. However, right whenever I bought this property, that was right whenever rates started to climb a little bit. Mm. And the issue was that, you know, a lot of people think that rates and prices are directly tied. They're not really directly tied. What's tied is rates and interest, like as far as intrinsic value and buyer's interest, not interest rates, right? And so rates started to climb up really fast. I hadn't refinanced out of this property yet. To give you perspective, we typically will either buy property cash or buy it hard money and then refinance out of it. And this one I hadn't refinanced out of yet. Interest rates started to climb up on me. I didn't really have the rental income to even show that this business was worth refinancing yet. And I was making, or I was spending even more money a month. So I ended up putting about $75,000 down on this house, on this property. It was like two unit in Galveston, a two bed, two bath, and a one bed, one bath apartment in the back. Mm-hmm. Beautiful home. I love it. Like, I still love it to this day. But I was spending $4,000 a month on the mortgage. And what I realized very, very quickly is that, or this was like going into the next year after I had refinanced, after everything was okay, I accepted my 9% interest rate. It was kind of crazy. After all that, I realized out of 12 months of the year, I'm going to make money 5 months on Airbnb. And this is just me. Airbnb is a great business. I just bought this house wrong. I'm going to make money 5 months out of the year. The other 7 months, I might be on the hook for whatever's left over of my mortgage amount, which was, like I said, was $4,000. And I had to come to the realization and say, okay, am I going to see Galveston's market recover in a way where I can feel comfortable about getting all of my money back once this is done? And I didn't. Now, it's just truth be told. Will Galveston be a great market at some point? Yeah, it definitely will be. But I think it wasn't worth me holding on to and continuing to hold that note every single month to just keep on waiting out of like faith that it's going to turn around.
Right.
So I ended up selling it actually this year. I was actually with Angel. Angel's here at our live studio audience.
Welcome, Angel.
We were in Mexico for Angel's birthday. Uh-huh. And normally you hear all these cool stories about, man, like I was on vacation. I closed on this property. Man, I was on the beach with them and I closed on a property and lost $60,000. And I was the most relieved that I had ever been.
Yeah.
It was a loss. It was a failure. But I knew that this was just going to let me propel into bigger and better things. And since then, it definitely has.
And in that failure, you learned so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I learned.
You lost money.
Yeah.
But you would say too as well that hurt, right? Sure. $60,000 that you could use to buy a car or something
or literally get
another house.
Yeah.
Right. But you could also look back and say the value of learning from that loss was worth more than the money.
100%. Because I think that it taught me so many lessons that I might even be reluctant to share on camera, but, you know, obviously share afterwards. Sure. But I think it taught me obviously about managing. It taught me how to buy properties correctly. It taught me not to buy into the hype either. I think that's a big thing, you know, kind of create your own path and do your own thing. And Airbnb, like I said, is a great route. It just wasn't for me.
Right. What makes the Monroe Group different?
You know, there's lots of teams and groups and companies out there that do lots of things very well. Mm-hmm. Some of them do, video content. Some of them do open houses. Some of them door knock. Some of them farm neighborhoods.
Right.
I think what makes me and the team stand out a little bit is we kind of do a little bit of everything. But in our area specifically, so to give everybody out there listening context, our office is in Clear Lake area.
Right.
And it has been. Keller Williams Clear Lake is who we started out with. And then I have an office a little bit down the road from there across NASA. And our footprint has like been buried in that area for sure. And I think the cool part about it is we were like sort of the first people to do real estate content in that area at a higher level. I mean, everybody was going out to new communities and recording cell phone videos. We were the first one to put a videographer on retainer and say, hey, we need to go shoot as many videos as we possibly can. And that's no shade to anybody. I just know that because anybody that shot videos after us asked for my videographer's contact information, you know, and I gave it obviously willingly.
Yeah. Chris is a great guy.
Chris is amazing. Yeah. Shout out to Director Green. And yeah, so I think that ultimately what sets us apart is that we just do everything that I think everyone else is too uncomfortable to do. Mm-hmm. And I kind of chalk it up. I mentioned it earlier that I had the blessing of being naive when I first got into the business. Now I just think that it's almost like people expect to see that content. People expect to get my phone calls. We just do the basics at a very, very high level, and we do them consistently. And nobody else does that.
And it's the quality, too, as well. It's not, I mean, obviously numbers is important.
Sure, absolutely, right? Yeah. I mean, and it's things that you can track. What you track, you can scale. I think, like, me and the team, you know, day in and day out, every single day we're together contacting clients, putting deals together, making sure we're, you know, able to really transact as many times as humanly possible. And there's hardly any agents out there that'll truly sit down for any portion of the day to actually prospect for their business. And you hear the excuse sometimes, oh, I'm so busy, I have so much going on. Well, that's great. But then once all those clients that you're busy with buy a house, what do you have after that?
Right. You just recently said that, you know, you, by the way, you said, you know, nothing's off the table. So I'm going to.
Of course, please. Yeah.
So, you know, you talked about your opening office here in the city, right? Here in downtown. So this will be your second location. So obviously you're doing something. I mean, something I heard about you before we even I met. So just prime example, yesterday I was at the gym and this guy that we're becoming friends, and he came up to me and said, hey, you know Caleb? I said, yeah. He goes, I worked with this guy back in Clear Lake. He goes, you know, to Lifetime down in Southeast Houston.
That's awesome.
And then he said, hey, you know some guy, and he has an office there at Spaces there in downtown.
Yep. Yeah.
And I said, well, that's my world. I said, hey, Caleb's coming into the office and come to the studio tomorrow.
Yeah.
But obviously you're making yourself very well known. And you know, you're making things happen. And there's something special that's happening at the Monroe Group. And you know, you could compare yourselves to other groups too in the market. And of course, and you're a very positive guy.
I appreciate that.
Very positive. Yeah. So I'm gonna put a spin here.
Yeah.
What are your competitors not doing?
That's a good question. And it's funny. I appreciate you bringing up the downtown team. I'm something that I'm very, very excited about. Which we'll talk about a little bit more. But I think something my competitors are not doing, I think, with all due respect, lots of people in our industry are just kind of stuck in their ways. Mm-hmm. And for example, you know, real estate content is very boring. I could sit here in front of a camera and make videos for hours talking about inspections, talking about earnest money, talking about option periods, talking about closing timelines. And, you know, it's valuable, but nobody's going to watch it.
Yeah.
Just being honest. And I think that ultimately what my competitors...
That's what I say about marketing, because I run a marketing agency. Like, who's going to sit down and watch a marketing guy talk about...
And it's funny because they need to hear it.
And like, okay, how do I spin that? And I would tell you, I'm a marketing guy, but I am my own worst marketing. Right? Like, I almost need like a secondary like a publicist.
You need a hype man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I get 95% of my business here is done by referrals. I'm probably my own people. I've had clients, potential clients, come up to me and say, you know, I really don't really see you guys around or anything. Like, well, I spend most of my time investing into marketing others. I don't really invest in myself. And who wants to sit around and hear some guy talking about marketing if you're not Gary Vee or, you know, so, but that's a challenge for me.
Yeah.
And the same, I think, goes back to where, not you, because your content is very good.
Yeah.
You know, and your video content is very good. It's very engaging.
Sure.
But going back to what you were saying about real estate, you know, they're talking about these other boring things.
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying about what they're doing wrong.
I think that everybody out there has a very scarce mindset. I've always been somebody that lives in abundance, you know, and I think that is what sets truly me apart from the rest of the competition. It doesn't matter that, you know, somebody else in my market sells a house on my street. The reality is that there's 7 million people in Houston. There's only 55, 60,000 agents in Houston, and 80% of those agents don't even sell a home. So when you look at that, it's like really only a handful of people that are really doing a good amount of business. And when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, well, you know, if I lose out on one sale, I always tell my team, if you lose one transaction, you usually get two. And I don't know what universe is making that happen, but that's usually how it works. You know, no, we never want to lose a transaction, never want to lose a client. But typically after that, we live in such a world of abundance that we're going to get more.
Do you feel like there's too many people doing real estate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a very saturated market. And like I mentioned earlier, it's the bar of entry is not that very high.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think that there's a lot of misinformation about real estate out there. Right. I think, you know, everybody sees the glitz and glamour online and they don't understand how to read a tax report to a client. You know what I mean? Or they don't know how to read a listing agreement to a client. They don't even know how to map out a development for certain builders and investors. So I think that when you're wanting to do real estate, you can get in and you can learn the basics. You could sell a couple homes a year and you might be fine. If you want to get into real estate and actually scale it, you have to be you have to be very comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think that's what this downtown team is going to do for me. You know, I think you and I talked about this over dinner. Mm-hmm. This is the past year that I've been so comfortable that I haven't really shaken anything up. And it wasn't until I made the decision that I'm going to go into a new market that's not even that new. It's 45 minutes down the road from my office currently.
Right? Houston's a huge market.
Huge.
I always tell people from other cities, like, you could be – and we have different cultures on different sides of the town.
That's very
true. You have different slangs.
Yeah.
You know, the Northsiders have talked different from people from Cypress. Cypress talk different from people from Southeast. Let's talk about Dave and his Pasadena folks.
Oh, yeah.
but I'm always making jokes with him about that.
Yeah.
But even different parts of town, you have your own, you know, your own different types of culture, even how they talk, even how they dress. It's this past weekend. I live up in Northeast Humble, Atascocita area, right by Lake Houston.
Yeah.
And it took me, and I had a party in Katy. And it took me an hour and 10 minutes to get there. And this is without traffic.
What time of day was that?
This is about 7 o'clock at night on a Saturday.
Jeez, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
And so, you know, when they say Houston's an hour away from Houston,
it
is absolutely correct. Now, that's without traffic.
Right.
Now, if it was with traffic would have been like an hour 30, an hour 45 minutes to get on that side of town.
Yeah.
There was once a time I lived in the Woodlands, and I worked down at Sugarland at the NBC station down in Southwest Houston.
Nice.
So some days it would take me 2 hours to get to work. Two hours to get to work.
God bless. That doesn't sound fun. You're making me discouraged about opening the city office. No,
but in that, you have the opportunity in the city, which is a great city.
Yeah.
I love Houston. I know you do too. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
It is such a culturally diverse city. So much potential. It's not a sexy city, but it's definitely a city where there's plenty of opportunity to make money.
100%.
You know, you go to Miami, it's fun when you're at the beach. But it's expensive and eventually gets tired and old and people aren't as friendly. By the way, I love Miami.
Yeah.
But then you go to, you know, Austin. It's a different city. Yeah. You know, San Antonio's cool. Man, it's slow.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Houston has that fast pace, you know, the bustle of the you know, fast pace of living in the city. But you still have the nice, you have the, you know, the Southern hospitality.
For sure.
Here. I don't think I would ever want to go anywhere else.
No, I agree with that.
In the world.
Full time, I think this is home for sure.
But I wouldn't mind like having a secondary property like in Mexico
and
staying there for a couple months and coming back. But going back to what you're saying, you know, having the opportunity to come to downtown, and for people that are listening, Houston is that big of a city where you could have 4 or 5 different locations and have and
still be in the greater Houston area.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying, what I'm most excited about going into the new year, to put it in perspective, I was just driving down the road the other day and I had just got back from an interview that I had conducted for somebody that's going to help us run that city office. Mm-hmm. And interview went well and I just had a call with an agent that we were probably going to be bringing on as well. So things were just kind of lining up, and out of the blue, while I'm on this drive, I just get super giddy and excited. And it felt as if like I was just getting licensed again. And like internally, I was like, that's kind of scary for anybody that gets in my way, because now I'm like Yoda. Like I have all this knowledge, but still the same energy as a super young guy that just wants to hustle. So it's almost like I'm starting fresh, but on level 10. It's kind of weird.
You know, again, going back to your age, you know, 24, you've had so much success at this point. Do you ever feel pressure to keep that going? Like it's a constant pressure to keep that momentum there?
Yes, but I don't want anybody to like misconstrue that.
Sure.
I think that if you ever read the book, what is it called? By Tim Grover.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the name.
There's Winning?
Winning. No, it's not Winning. The other one.
Uh-huh.
It's a black cover. I'll think of it randomly. But in the book, he talks about stress.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how stress can be a good thing for you because it inevitably pushes you. And he talks about Michael Jordan, how Michael Jordan would trash talk the other team, not for the sake of throwing the other team off,
right,
but for the sake of making sure that he said it. Now he has to go do it.
Right.
And so for me, yes, the answer to your question is yes. Do I feel some pressure and some stress? Absolutely. But I think that the way that I utilize it is the correct way, you know, and I think that everybody has the opportunity to do it that way. It's just the second that something uncomfortable comes on, they don't know how to react to it.
You know, and now you have a team.
Yep.
Yeah, but how many people you have on your team?
It's me, 4 agents, 3 admin currently.
Congrats.
That's just Clear Lake.
Yeah. It's quite an achievement to do that on your own, but then to also have that same level of success with multiple people under you. How do you keep that same level of quality, and how do you keep your team to that Caleb Monroe standard?
I think, you know, that's a great question. I love that question. So to give everybody out their perspective, production-wise, I'd say we're probably the number 2 or number 3 team in all of Houston mm-hmm. when it comes to just production.
Right.
What I'm most proud of in that, if I look at my competitors that are above and below me, our team is probably per agent production the best in the city, no question. Each of my agents will sell at least 20 homes, which is great. It's kind of unheard of when the average might sell 9.
Are they all about your age?
Our oldest agent is in her 40s.
Okay.
Youngest is 21.
Right, and not that it makes a difference,
right.
But there's definitely a generational difference.
For sure.
You know, work ethic, we talk about this. I don't have no problem talking about this. Absolutely. Work ethic is different from my era versus your era.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up with, not the saying you did it, but I did. I grew up with a belt.
Yeah. I did.
I would wear, you know, when I had the belt, I knew my dad was coming home with the belt and I'll get some whoopings because I did something wrong. I had 3 to 4 pants on to make sure that that's how I was raised.
Yeah,
make sure I didn't have any welts on my behind or behind my leg.
Yeah.
But that's how I grew up. You know, and nowadays that could be considered abuse.
Yeah.
Right?
Quick. Yeah, no, seriously.
But, you know, that's just a difference. And even like, for instance, here, we have 18 people as part of our team. There is a difference in, you know, somebody that's in their 50s,
yep.
which we have those, and somebody that's in their 20s, and we have those. And I would tell you, like, somebody that's in the 50s, great work ethic, but doesn't understand technology.
Yeah.
Somebody in their 20s, sorry, Sessad, but he has great work ethic.
Yeah.
It's hard to find somebody with great, incredible work ethic. They know technology.
Yeah.
They know the ins and outs, social media. They know, you know, what's trending. They know the lingo. But I have employees that have came in and said, hey, I don't want to work 9 to 6.
Yeah.
I've even changed hours for them. And then they come back and say, you know what? I want to work at my own pace. I want to do, you know, Uber.
Yep. Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah. You know, and with your how are you able to manage that with your team?
I think ultimately, it's a great question, like mm-hmm. I said. And I think, you know, for me, to give extra context, everybody that's on the team now currently, even the ones that, not so much the ones that are going to be in the downtown office, but everybody that's on the Clear Lake team now has sought after me in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And I think that in the beginning, I hired for very wrong reasons. I ended up bringing a lot of people in that I think I'm very good friends with, but there wasn't enough reason for us to be in business together, if that makes sense. But I just liked you, and our interview was so great, so I think you should come onto the team and you should join it. But nowadays, I think that everybody, you know, I kind of lead by example, and I don't think enough leaders do that. I think most team leads get into a team aspect because they want to get out of production themselves. While I know that my best use of my time is still producing. I will make myself more money than the team will make me off of sales easily. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's not always going to be the case. So for the time being, I should probably lead by example and then elevate other people to then somewhat replace me at some way, shape, form, or fashion, you know, whether that's a sales manager or just an office manager. But they all are kind of like blood in, blood out, and, you know, understand the standards to the T. It's mm-hmm. funny, we'll have events sometimes, and love to all of you out there, but so many agents will come to the events specifically to talk to me about joining the team because they know I might not answer their DM, I might not answer their call. So
you have a very thorough vetting process, I'm sure.
You know, my vetting process is really my team kind of playing, you know, guard at the door, making sure that, you know, nobody's passing with
them. Because somebody comes in, they could change the entire culture quickly.
Easily, and that's the most cancerous. Important aspect of my team is the culture. And so my vetting process is a one-on-one interview with me first, but then it goes to like, okay, I want to get you around my team. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring you out to the team meeting. I might be revealing my secrets here, but bring you out to the team meeting. And at some point in the team meeting, I'm probably going to walk out, you know, kind of quietly. And then the team is going to inevitably just grill you with questions until they feel like you're either in or you're out. And that's the culture. But that stemmed from me showing up every day earlier than everybody, me staying later than everybody, and then saying, hey, you know, I've only got to this because of these things.
Right.
You know? And showing and proving, I guess.
And in that, I'm sure you've, in leading and managing your team, you've had some people that just didn't work out.
100%. Yeah. I think it's interesting because I mentioned a second ago, I hired for the wrong reasons in the beginning, but it took me so long to decide that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, the reason it took me so long is because I love people naturally. I think we've talked about that too. That's kind of what my parents taught me.
It's hard. One. That's a hard balance.
Yes.
I'm the same way. I love, you know, I love connecting with people. I love getting to, you know, I want them to win. Right. I want my staff to win. When I first started this company, I was the same way. I was like, you know, who's going to be here in this, in my team? Right. They're my family, right? You heard that cliche. It was, everybody says it. Oh, your family. Welcome to the family.
And then, yeah.
But that family is only good when you're giving them a paycheck.
Yeah.
I realized.
Yeah.
And also that comfort level that you've opened up yourself to exposes you. And also it provides another element to the team where it says, okay,
sure.
Me and Hector are great friends, and he'll let me slide. He'll let me come in today. Yeah. He'll let me, you know, I can call in sick, or I could be, you know, in Mexico and work, and they won't know, and Hector wouldn't do anything about that because Hector's my boy,
right?
And I realized that, man, that the greatest thing that I could do as a leader to my team is to not be their friend.
Yeah,
I have to be a leader. It's best for me, and I told the team yesterday, I'd rather be an a-hole to you,
yeah,
and you get a paycheck than to be your friend and you not have a job.
I agree. And you think you're right. I mean, it is definitely a hard balance. We have, you know, the most family feel. Everybody kind of loves each other in the office for sure. But it's funny. I don't remember what the topic was or how we even got on the subject, but we're just talking one day and I say something, maybe it was like I'd got off an argument on the phone. And I'm like, can y'all believe this guy? And one of my agents, Shaylin's kind of like, well, yeah, you are kind of an a-hole. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? And we talked it. I mean, I wasn't upset or anything about the comment, right? We laughed about it. And I was like, what do you mean? And she broke things down. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. I mean, I inevitably did run into some of the wrong people that I shouldn't have had in place. And it's a hard decision to let those people go. It was a necessary decision, I think, though, to make the changes that I made. At that time, I was not profitable. I was making lots of money, but I was also selling my butt off just to kind of pay the bills for the team.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense.
You're making them happy.
Exactly.
And they're going home happy, but they're not producing.
Right. My goal was to have a team to grow other people. And I think what I did in the process initially of that was take so much away from myself for the sake of growing other people.
Yeah.
I could have made boatloads of money and saved boatloads of money just being a solo agent, but I don't think that I'd be anywhere near where I am today without that.
Going back to like friendships and stuff like that, you know, I had a employee here that I became very close friends with. Dave, or a good friend Dave, by the way, at the time he worked at Comcast, right? And Dave also helped provided our internet services here at the office and was at the Wi-Fi. And Dave would sometimes come to the office and work from here.
Yeah.
And I would tell him, hey, Dave, come by. But he had no idea. Dave didn't know who that the employee that was here was also one of my good friends. And the employee did not know that Dave was one of my best friends.
Right.
And so I went off to lunch and Dave's texting me. He goes, bro, what's going on with your employees? I go, why? What's up? He's asking me if we're hiring at Comcast, but Dave was only here to work. The guy, my employee, which was my friend, thought that Dave was here to help fix the internet.
Right. That's hilarious. Yeah. Those are the stories you love to hear coming back.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are things that, you know, you come across and, you know, I go on about, you know, my experiences, you know, as a leader and business owner and going through employees. And that's probably one of my biggest struggles, and again, being transparent is getting people up to having set expectations of delivering a quality.
Yeah.
You know, my name is on it.
Yeah.
My name, you know, when at the end of the day, I literally had somebody, a client of ours, a week ago, and I went into a conference room with 8 leaders in that business, and I have never been through this experience before. And, you know, I work with some big names in advertising here in the Houston market and, you know, from Mattress Mac to others. And but this was probably one of the most intimidating moments of business for me. And here I am, and I feel like I was at a firing squad. I don't know. I just showed up. I knew the client wasn't happy.
Yeah.
But I showed up unannounced just to tell them, hey, I'm involved. I apologize for the experience or whatever. And one thing that one of the women, the leaders there at the client said, and I never met the client before. There's some clients I have never met.
Yeah.
Right? Which is cool.
Right.
I think that's a great experience too, is not to have clients I don't need to talk to because the team is strong enough to
deal
with it.
Yeah.
But I never met them before, introduced myself. And one of the things they said is that, Hector, I followed you on social media and I unfollowed you because I thought you didn't care. And that, like, that did it for me. That did it for me. That's when I was like, okay, I did not build this company from my daughter's pink bedroom. I didn't do this so that my name could go through the mud.
Of course.
Because money I could replace, but my integrity is something so hard to get that, to build that back up.
100%.
And, you know, that is my lifeline. People calling me, yeah, they might find out Hector's an a-hole to work with, right, Cesar? By the way, Cesar here is one of my best friends.
Nice.
He does work here. And we've gone through a lot working here together at Brand Nation. And but while we were here at work, there is a fine line. I rarely talk to him at the office.
Yeah.
Sometimes he might think I'm ignoring him, but I am purposely avoiding him.
Yeah.
So that there's not a people don't think there's favoritism.
Yeah.
And I want people, my friends, to know if they're working here, that there's still, at the end of the day, there's still work to be done.
Of course.
We could be friends after hours.
Yep.
But anyways, back to that story. I was really just shocked, and I was really moved as a leader.
Of course.
Of hearing that, saying that I didn't care.
Yeah.
Hector, we just thought you didn't care anymore. And I was like, no, I care about everything.
Yeah.
I care for my client's money as much as I care about my own.
Of course.
To the point where, I mean, I'm up all night still thinking about, man, it needs to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, that changed my, you know, my mentality. That really impacted me. Did you ever have those moments where somebody just kind of a gut punch?
Yeah, I think it was a recent one was like maybe a year and a half ago. We had a client. So we have this internal system where we like look at all of our closing dates and we were able to change them and, you know, update them, so on and so forth, because we're really big about giving gifts on special dates, you know, home anniversary, birthdays, anniversary for your wedding, different things like that. Like, I just love help, like giving back as much as possible and letting people know that I'm thinking about you, you know? And so there was one client who our closing date was, I remember in the transaction, our closing date had gotten pushed back, but I guess in our system, it still had the old closing date, whatever that was. And we had sent some cookies out because typically we'll send Tiff Streets, sponsor me, Tiff Streets. We'll send out Tiff Streets to clients for their home anniversary, warm cookies, you know, 1 year anniversary, just a sweet treat. And we sent it out on the previous closing date. This closing date was actually like 4 or 5 days later. And I completely missed it. Didn't even look at it. Like, didn't even think twice about it. And I get a really, like, not a nasty text, but I get a text from the client. And he's like, and this, you know, the cookies were not the only thing. That was more like the final straw.
I think
I had dropped the ball a lot on communicating after the transaction. Kind of felt as if, almost like I didn't care. Like, once the sale was done, I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And ask any of my other clients, that's never the case. It's just somehow this client slipped through the cracks and it was very unfortunate. And that was like their final straw. They got super, super upset to the point where they're like, you know, like arguing with me over the fact that I sent the cookies 3 days early. And I didn't know what it really was, but it really boiled down to the fact that I dropped the ball on communication after the fact. So since then, all of my clients get a call every quarter. We have a care bear in place. She's one of our staff members. So 4 staff members. She's one of our staff members. And her job is literally showing love to our clients. Not because I forget, but because...
And you're talking about clients who've already...
transacted.
That's it.
Yeah.
So if I bought a home from you...
Then you got candy canes this month for Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. Last in October, we did like little carving set for pumpkins.
I need a new agent.
Yeah, so...
I haven't heard... I bought my home 7 years ago. I haven't heard... I didn't get one thing from them.
Yeah, so like the Care Bear aspect, that's something I heard at a conference 2 years ago and only implemented this year. And man, I mean, her name's April. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, again, it's not because I forget home anniversaries. I'm the one that's approving all these things, especially after that fiasco. But she's the one that gives us her time to be able to drive out to our client's property, place it on their doorstep with a handwritten note from us, basically just showing that we're thinking about you, you know? And I think past that, like, you know, we try to do that more even with events and things like that. All of our clients somewhat turn into family, you know, and I think it's just because in the process of buying or selling a home, it's a huge asset and it's a huge commitment. And we're like the therapist throughout the entire transaction. And, you know, we get to learn
That's a traumatic process.
Yeah, we get to learn our clients on the finest basis possible, and I love it. And,
yeah, especially during closing.
Oh, man, it's like the most emotional thing.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think
sometimes when it falls apart, they blame you.
Yeah.
It's not really your fault.
You know, poop flows down creek, and we're always at the bottom of the hill, you know, so... I think it's, you know, that extra step for just showing our clients we love them is something that I got from that gut punch that I'll never put out of place.
Mm. What's next for the Monroe Group?
Downtown for sure. I'm actually excited about this. I got Send Me, actually. You introduced me to Send Me, and I'm very excited that him and his wife and I are all going to be working together, helping get the development off the ground in Demure and Court. So we're super excited about that development coming up to the market. And then at the start of next year, we're going to have another new development coming up in Acres Homes area. So a lot of development in the new year. I think that that's like an untapped market in downtown area that I think there is clients out there that are not being served in the highest possible way on both sides of the transaction.
Right.
You know, on the buyer side, not necessarily getting the best incentives from the best lenders because they're buying a home that's in an area that might give them a $10,000 grant. And they just don't know.
Right.
And then on the seller side for our developer clients, they might be pushing out their own marketing, but if we can double up on that, and push it out to different areas that you know you might be touching and we're touching the other areas, you know, I think that there's so much more that you can go and get past that.
And let's talk about entrepreneurship a little bit.
Yeah.
What are a few, you know, traits that an entrepreneur must have to be successful in your eyes and then through your experience?
That's a really good question. I feel like the cliche answer is grit. But taking that a step further, it's like belief. You know what I mean? I think that there's going to be so many days, so many days that you're not even going to want to get up. You're not going to want to work today. You're not going to want to do anything. And simply it's because you haven't been paid in the last 2 weeks. You haven't made a check in the last month. And there's a book called The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And it talks about how it's not about just making an exponential leap overnight and becoming a millionaire. It's about the constant day in, day out, little dollar activity tasks that you do to accumulate up to $1 million at some point or another. And I think that that's kind of what sticks with me all the time is that like you kind of have to fall in love with the process, not the result. That's what I'd say.
That's like, such a painful process sometimes.
It's painful, but I think that the one thing an entrepreneur can do that sets them apart from every other entrepreneur is learning to love that and just love that pain. You know, there's a saying that says you got to have to eat poop and learn how to like the taste.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's, you know, the best way that you could put that.
What I tell you today, I said, I like pain. He told me I'll beat you up then. But you know that the pain, you know, because I was talking about tattoos, right?
Yeah.
So the pain of the tattoos, it's sometimes it's a
sensation.
It's a piece of sensation, but also kind of offsets an emotional pain that's there. But emotional pain that part of my life has been through, you know, the last 12 years has been through entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Through a lot of failure, through a lot of mistakes that I made, bad decisions that I made. You talk about grit. You talked about going through the pain of things.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, looking for the light at the end of the tunnel and, you know, small focus gets you big results. I think every entrepreneur, just like myself getting into it, remember I was selling Cutco knives. Then I was like, well, I'm gonna do my college degree and I'm gonna also sell cars and then I'll do real estate on the side. And doing all that, I would have probably made good money in maybe some of those, but I would not have excelled in any of them. And I think that everybody out there, entrepreneurs, salespeople, real estate agents, they overcomplicate things because we wear a lot of hats. And ultimately, I think the best thing that someone can do in entrepreneurship is narrow their focus. I'm not even going to say niche down. I don't think it needs to be that. But narrow your focus to the point where it's not you're doing a million things at once and getting shiny object syndrome.
Interesting.
But you have one thing that you know works. Whether it pays you $1 or $100, you keep doing it until it pays you whatever you need it to pay you. So small focus gets you big results. You track everything you track, you can scale.
Yeah.
Track everything, even if it's like
manpower hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Conversations, appointments, sales, what you track, you can scale. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I can go on and on about that list for entrepreneurs, but I think that those are like the main overview components.
And what is your why?
Oh, that's a good question. My why is to create freedom. You know, whatever that freedom looks like, freedom for myself, freedom for my family, freedom in homeownership for clients. I live to create freedom.
Yeah. Well, Caleb, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. This is our first ever episode here of Beyond the Hustle. Caleb, man, I am so excited about your future. Look forward to seeing your success and further success at the Monroe Group. And man, I'm so happy that you've been able to join us for our first ever episode. Anything last things you want to say?
Watch out for us because we're coming to eat your lunch in the city.
That's it. I'm here for it. All right, guys. Thank you guys for watching or paying attention or listening on Spotify or Apple. Make sure you guys hit the follow button here, and you guys have a blessed one.